From Countersport to Lafayette Hill, Indiana to Meadville, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Donald Trump has brought his own unique style to the presidency. Some find it brash, others like it. Ed Martin of Eagle Forum is here to talk about letting Trump be Trump. Blighted properties are a problem in many communities. Now some are forming land banks in an effort to clean up those properties and get them back on the tax rolls. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report. And soon we will know where Amazon will locate its second national headquarters. What we won't know is how much Pittsburgh and Philadelphia are promising them if they move here. Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Ed Martin of Eagle Forum in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. A much-anticipated grand jury report containing details of an investigation into massive child sex abuse by Catholic priests in Pennsylvania's six dioceses was released this past week, and it revealed that more than 300 priests were involved in molesting over 1,000 children and that their crimes were systematically covered up by the church. The statute of limitations has run out on many of the cases, which occurred years ago. The grand jury addressed that, saying, quote, "We are sick over all the crimes that will go unpunished and uncompensated," end quote. In the wake of the report, advocates for the victims have renewed calls for the Pennsylvania General Assembly to lift those limitations on prosecution. The report is one of the most extensive conducted by any state, and nationally, U.S. bishops have acknowledged that more than 17,000 children have been molested in recent decades by Catholic clergy. The state Supreme Court is still deciding whether or not to release the names of additional clergy who have been accused but not given the opportunity to defend themselves against abuse charges. Yet another Pennsylvania state representative is calling it quits. Bernie O'Neill has represented a Bucks County district for the past 16 years, but on the last day to do so, he dropped his reelection campaign and filed to have his name removed from the ballot. O'Neill cited the need that he and his wife have to care for a special needs relative who has developed more significant health problems as the reason for ending his legislative career. His late exit from the race leaves Republican Party officials with just days to name a replacement candidate. Read about all things Pennsylvania on the all-new patownhall.com. Two former Trump presidential campaign managers, Corey Lewandowski and David Bossi, will be in Pennsylvania this coming week to speak at events for Eagle Forum. They are authors of the new book, Let Trump Be Trump. Ed Martin is president of the Eagle Forum Education and Legal Defense Fund. He is here to talk about the president's style and why it has so far been successful. Ed, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Ed, when we talk about President Trump, of course, since the very first day that he announced his candidacy, his outsized personality has really been the dominant factor. As we look at the president, there are some who say that he's being successful because of his personality, and others who are saying, well, maybe if he toned it down a little bit, he could get further. What are your thoughts on that?
It's funny you asked me that question because I was mentioning to someone the other day. When I worked for the late Phyllis Schlafly, and she was a supporter of President Trump, one of the things that she wrote about him and his policies 64 times in the year and a half before she died. She died in September, just before the election. She's writing about his policies. She's writing about his approach. I remember watching TV once with her, and she laughed out loud watching Trump. And she said, he just doesn't do what they expect him to do. And in some ways, his consistent conduct has been to go counter to the expected kind of things you'd expect a guy like him to do. Even, by the way, in some conventional ways. When he won, he hired Reince Priebus as his, there's no more insider establishment Republican than Reince. He hired Mitch McConnell's wife as Transportation Secretary, Elaine Chao. So he has been an unconventional president. Now, what I would say is, He's also very unique to this moment in the sense that his use of Twitter, his use of the sort of 24-hour cycle of sort of reality TV, is he's particularly adept at it. And so will we ever go back to a president that is as accessible and active? I don't know. Probably. We'll probably go back to more normal people. But for now, I just think his success has been being counter what people expect. And in the fall elections, I keep telling people, I'm predicting a Trump red wave. It's not a red wave only because people don't like Republicans, too. They're sick of both parties. But what they're mostly sick of is the swamp. And they don't associate Trump with the swamp, even though he's been in office now. They just think of him as different than the media, different than the Congress. And I think that's why people are going to pick more than they usually would towards the party of the president, the Republicans, this fall. Anyway, it's an extraordinary set of skills and timing that has put Trump. One last thing, he seems to be succeeding in some of the basics. The economy's better. The government is stable. Some of the regulatory things are better. There seems to be more world peace. That progress that is, if he wasn't succeeding, there would be distraction. So it's amazing time.
Let's talk for a second or two about this use of Twitter. We never really had a president who really tweeted unfiltered before. I'm relatively certain that during his presidency, Barack Obama's tweets were well vetted by staff before they actually went out to his followers. So here we have a president who is unfiltered with tweets. Is this akin to going back to, say, the early 1960s, where television came into its own as a campaign and governing tool, or before that radio, or before that targeted mailings? Is this really the next generation in the evolution of campaigning and governing?
That's an interesting way to say that. I hadn't really put that together, especially the 1960s with TV. I think you're right. You know, I wrote a book. I started to write a more serious book, a book on Donald Trump's use of Twitter, and I started to compile his tweets. At the end of 2017, I wrote a short book, 100-page book called Can't Trump This 2017, Top Trump Wins and Epic Speeches, and I just put all his best speeches and a list of all his wins with kind of explanations because I wanted people to have a tool. They could say, here's what he did in 2017. So I started to write a book on Trump's tweets. And it's hard to write about tweets. It's hard to give enough context. It gets kind of, I'm not really an academic. I'm more of a sort of popular, you know, I like to write for people to understand. I changed it into, you're going to laugh out loud, a comic coloring and activity book. And it's called Can't Trump This Covfefe. And it's a coloring book, adult. This is kind of a new trend in the last 5 years or so, these adult comic coloring books. They sort of, I used a tweet or two on each page, and then I had an artist draw in a kind of their illustration. So there was a tweet on there was a page on Build the Wall, there was a page on Kanye, a page on his family, first family. But my point in this is that the use of Twitter is so important for two reasons. One, he has bypassed the media. In fact, he drives the media now. He is in charge of the agenda by use of Twitter. And it's dramatic to watch. His tweet on Charlottesville a few days ago where he said, it was a great tragedy and I denounce all racism. The rest of the day and the day after, they were debating his tweet on denouncing racism. Some said he didn't do it enough. Some said he did it just right. So he drives the agenda. That's the first point. But the second point is, on Twitter, he is himself accessible to the public. He's almost changed our representative republic, our representative democracy, into something like a direct democracy in this sense. The best example I can give is when he noticed that Twitter was up in arms over the elephant carcasses coming into America. The wildlife division of whatever in the government changed the law allowing these elephant carcasses to come back into the country. On Twitter, Trump changed the policy because he saw the people tweeting. He saw the uproar was broadly uproar. And my point is, have we ever had a president? Have we ever had any elected official that was able to be accessed by the people through this medium? So that's a dramatic change, too. And I really do think that matters. I tend to think people feel more connected to him than they quite even, certainly than pollsters and others really understand.
We are talking with Ed Martin, who is president of the Eagle Forum Education and Legal Defense Fund. They're actually going to be having a couple of dinners here in Pennsylvania. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. But before we get to that, Ed, Let's touch again. You talked about this president doing the basics right. And one of the items, areas you mentioned was the economy. Of course, Jim Carville very famously said back during the Clinton era, it's the economy, stupid. As we approach this November's elections, how important is the economic successes that this administration has had going to be playing out electorally?
When people feel like there's more opportunity and more optimism in their lives, they just feel better about what's going on. So when you see the Trump deranged, you know, the Maxine Waters and the people yelling and screaming, I sympathize with their angst. I had friends that were so upset about Obama, they were not particularly balanced. You know, I didn't enjoy those policies. But when you look at the rest of the country, people are more optimistic. NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Businesses, does a poll, a survey every quarter, I think it is. In the history of the survey, it's on small business owners' confidence, and it's never been higher than it is now. Consumer confidence, all-time high. In other words, people feel better about what's happening, even if they don't agree with everything that the president's doing. And, you know, the numbers, African Americans, a year ago, Trump, 19% approval rating among African Americans. Right now, similar polls, similar data, similar numbers polled, and it's up to like 35%. Now, that's not enough. I think you need to do more, right? I think we need to be more success for everybody. But I think what you're seeing is people feel better about the future because they see opportunities around them. And look, we're still a divided politically. We're still two parties. There's always going to be 45% that are against President Trump and 45% that are always with him, I suppose. But in a race like, for example, in Pennsylvania, Senator Casey has to be wondering whether he's losing voters that he doesn't see that he's lost. And by that, I mean there's people that are opening steel mills in Pennsylvania, more than one, and people are getting back to work. And either one of two things is going to happen. The union shops that used to be able to whip their voters to go vote, they're going to be busy working, and they're not going to be as motivated. They're not going to be angry like Maxine Waters or the Charlottesville protesters. And some of them are going to be saying, you know what, we finally have a president, I don't care what party, he stood up against NAFTA, he stood up against the EU, and I like that feeling, and I think that's going to be different.
As we mentioned, Eagle Forum is going to have its Pennsylvania Eagle Forum dinner, actually two of them coming up this Thursday and Friday, Thursday in Pittsburgh, that's August 23rd. Friday, August 24th in the Philadelphia suburbs at the Philadelphia Country Club, to be exact. So that's right. Tell us a little bit about Eagle Forum and why you're having this dinner. And tell us especially, Ed, a bit about the speakers, because this sounds very interesting.
Yeah, thank you. Well, the first interesting thing is that Phyllis Schlafly, our the late founder of our organization, believed very much in the states, in people getting involved in their state where they lived. I'm from Missouri, where Phyllis was from. She's from Illinois also. And we have folks all across the country. And in Pennsylvania, we have the interesting distinction of having Fran Bevin was a longtime leader, great conservative leader, leader of our Eagles. She, for the last few years, has been still helping us. But the leader of our Pennsylvania Eagles is a guy named Ned Pfeiffer. Ned is Phyllis Schlafly's first cousin. He has the distinction of being one of the only people I've ever met that was babysat by Phyllis Schlafly. She was a few years older than him. So we do these two events. We always come in and we bring in national speakers, and I come into town. Phyllis used to always come, and we do them back to back. As you pointed out, on the 23rd, we're at Oakmont Country Club. That's Thursday night. And then on Friday, we're at the Philadelphia Country Club, the 24th of August. And we get good speakers. We had Alan West, Lou Holtz. And this year, we have Corey Lewandowski and David Bossy co-authored a book called Let Trump Be Trump. They were both kind of insiders for the campaign. Corey, as one of the earliest guys who worked for Trump then and campaign manager, and then he was pushed out but stayed close to the president. And then Dave Bossy, who was a deputy campaign manager for most of the last 6 or 8 months of the campaign. So there'll be great evening events, and we'll have many of the key elected officials from both Pittsburgh area and Philadelphia area, and some of the statewide folks, too, will be there.
Again, we have been talking with Ed Martin, who is president of the Eagle Forum Education and Legal Defense Fund. And again, those dinners will be this Thursday, August 23rd in the Pittsburgh area, Friday, August 24th in the Philadelphia area. Ed, if folks are interested in learning more about Eagle Forum and or interested in attending this dinner, where can they go?
Best way to find out more is I encourage people to email me directly. I always am happy to give him my email. It's very simple, ed at phyllisschlafly.com, ed@phyllisschlafly.com. You can find out more about it, about the event at phyllisschlafly.com. We're really encouraged, and thank you for a chance to talk about this. It's a Pennsylvania is a fascinating state this year with the Senate race, the governor race. It's and as I talked to somebody, might have even Corey the other day, everybody knows 2020, if you win Pennsylvania, you win the race in 2020. So it's going to be a big, important place.
It's going to be fascinating, as it has been for years. Also, our state organization is at www.paeagles.org. That's paeagles.org. You can get information there as well. Ed Martin of Eagle Forum. Ed, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Have a great day. God bless.
Land banks are a relatively new creation in Pennsylvania, and they are designed to help counties and municipalities rehabilitate blighted properties. Here to talk about how they work are Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi of the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy. Frank?
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm your host, Frank Gamrat, and with me today is Allegheny Institute Senior Policy Analyst, Eric Montardi. You recently did a research paper, or policy brief, which is available on our website, on land banks in Pennsylvania. It's a relatively new trend, you know, a handful of years in the making. Could you please tell us, what is a land bank and its primary purpose?
Sure. A land bank is a public entity that's created by a municipality or some municipalities working together, and it's basically there to remediate blight. Now, we've heard this before.
Oh, yeah.
We go a long way back with blight, but basically what a land bank is supposed to do is sort of be a central clearinghouse for properties that are really dilapidated, abandoned, in the arrears on taxes. Nobody knows who owned them. Basically, what it can do then is to go in and bid on one of these properties, obtain it, and then get it back on the tax rolls, because a land bank isn't supposed to be there to just accumulate property hold on to it. It's got a limit on how long it can hold on to property. It's basically there to try to get it back into the hands of somebody who wants to fix it up. If there's indeed a structure on it, it may be an abandoned lot that needs to be cared for, and then possibly a structure put on it as well. And it is relatively new. There's been other states that have created land banks, but Pennsylvania's law goes back to 2012. When we first looked at land banks 4 years ago, there were four of them. Now, today, there's 22, and basically just involves a municipality or a handful of them, or two or more than that, creating it, coming up with an intergovernmental agreement, filing the papers with the state to get a certificate of an incorporation, and then it acts like another organization. Right. It has to have bylaws, it has to have office space, it has to have some arrangement for staffing. And this is the critical thing, is that when the state created the land banks, there is no revenue that's specifically set aside for land banks. They can't raise taxes because these people are not elected when they serve on the board. And so it has to come from agreement by the municipalities that participate in it. They'll possibly contribute to it. There may be grants that could be private and public. And then it could be, if they successfully turn property over, there may be an agreement between the taxing bodies that they'll assign part of the real estate taxes to the land bank for a number of years to help fund them.
You mentioned that it doesn't act like any other organization, not like an authority which has powers to issue bonds against certain revenue streams. But it brings up an interesting question, and that is, could the mission of a land bank be achieved by any other branch of government that may already exist?
That's what we asked back in 2014. Sort of seemed to make sense to us that you already had redevelopment authorities, whether they're county or municipal, that, again, their mission is to eradicate blight. Some of them obviously work on much bigger projects. But what the General Assembly just did, and this became law in June, was for counties that are not including Philadelphia and Allegheny, for counties from the second class A down, that if they want to, they can go ahead and designate their redevelopment authority as a land bank. It probably makes some sense, because looking at the audits and the ordinances of the land banks already on that have already been created, a lot of them already kind of lean very heavily on the redevelopment authority. So this legislation probably was hearing from places that either didn't have land banks or ones that may have expressed some frustration to say, well, we wish we could have just used the redevelopment authority. And obviously they're going to have to follow some certain practices because, you know, land bank boards have some requirements of people who have to serve on there that redevelopment authorities may not. If you have money that comes from land bank operations, it's going to have to go into a separate fund, but they still would have to be audited, produce annual reports and the like.
Right. Yeah, because in your research, you noticed that in some of these cases, the people that are working on the land banks also work for the redevelopment authorities. So there seems to be a decent bit of overlapping, at least with the staffing of a land bank with a redevelopment authority. So the amended law, of course, then goes out and kind of puts a little more of a clarity on what a land bank can do. And like you said, you know, whether or not they can be held accountable through audits and financial reports and data reporting and the like.
Yeah, it certainly does. And it just seems to make sense in the counties that could make this change. Well, if they already have a land bank that's up and running, even if they're sort of interwoven, I don't know if they're going to say, well, maybe now we'll shut this down and we will just move all the functions to the redevelopment authority. That might happen. This probably will affect counties where there probably is a land bank already. And they can then go ahead and say, well, we already have a redevelopment authority. If we're going to pursue this, then this might be a way to do it.
Now, in your research, you noticed that there should be some metrics to evaluate the success of the land banks, you know, how many properties have been returned to the tax rolls and that kind of thing. That was not inherent in the law that came about.
Well, the land bank law does require an annual report and an annual audit. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be some, you know, stories of success, right? I mean, for instance, here in Pittsburgh, the land bank here just purchased its first property. Well, that property was owned by the city of Pittsburgh for most of the better part of the last 30 years. How quickly then it goes back onto the tax rolls, that's one way to measure is this land bank or, you know, any land bank that's getting into, you know, the property acquisition game successful. How much do they have to spend? When they go in and bid on the property, if it's just like back taxes, is it a nominal amount? Mm-hmm. They have to spend money, then they have to hold it, then they have to advertise for it, hopefully then sell it, get it into somebody's hands who's then going to do something with it, put it back on the tax rolls. That would be one of the metrics I would think would be there. Now, I mean, we know from, again, because this is a newer law, you know, some of these audited land banks, haven't done much. They may have reported less than, you know, $50,000 from property sales at this point. You look at a land bank like Philadelphia, which was one of the first, and obviously is a, you know, huge municipality. I mean, they've got like $25 million of property that they've acquired. And again, you know, who knows what they're going to do with it at this point. Westmoreland County, which is very near here, they have, I think, in their annual report, they said around 90 properties, and they have sold 55 of them. So, again, presumably those are back on the tax rolls. That, I think, you know, looking at what they're spending, how quickly they dispose of the property to get it back out of the land bank's hands and then into the hands of a taxpayer where then it's back on the tax rolls. I mean, that's pretty, you know, paramount, I think, in this whole undertaking.
Well, again, you know, as we advocate, you want to keep the government reach at a minimum, and if there's going to be new agencies like land banks, they need to be regulated, they need to be carefully watched over to make sure that their reach doesn't extend more than it needs to. Thank you very much for wonderful insight into land banks. They are across the state, so something all our listeners can be aware of. If you'd like to read about this or other interesting facts, you can go to our website, AlleghenySuite.org, and you can also follow us on Twitter. So for Eric Montardi, this is Frank Cameron. Have a great day.
Amazon is conducting a nationwide search for a location to establish a second headquarters. Two Pennsylvania cities are in the running, but we don't know what taxpayer dollars are being promised to lure them here. Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
There's a reason corporate welfare and a lack of transparency so often go hand in hand, because politicians know that if citizens had all the facts about the special deals they make with special interests, taxpayers would storm City Hall, pitchforks in hand. Lately, Pennsylvanians have been hearing a lot from politicians about what a great deal Amazon's second headquarters, commonly referred to as HQ2, would be for Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, both of which made the company's shortlist. But if it's such a great deal, then why is the proposal, which will reportedly offer tax breaks and other economic incentives worth more than $1 billion, under lock and key? Officials say they need to keep it secret to preserve a competitive advantage. But is it too much to ask that they let the people who will be paying the bills know how their money is being spent? For Harrisburg, apparently it is. After the Pennsylvania Office of Open Records ordered the state to release the information on the incentive package, the state sued a newspaper, the Allentown Morning Call, in an effort to keep it from finding out the details of the financial package offered. In effect, the state government is all but suing itself to keep from having to reveal how craven it is. This should disturb every citizen who cares about transparency and good government, no matter your view on the state's efforts to lure Amazon. It's time taxpayers got to see the incentive package offered by Pittsburgh and Philadelphia and the state. It's bad enough that the state will go to such extremes to keep from us how much of our money they want to spend and how they want to spend it. The bigger issue is why we keep spending money on corporate welfare schemes that never seem to do us any good. Pennsylvania spent more money than any other state on corporate welfare from 2007 to 2016. If that was the path to economic success, we'd be well down the road by now. But we aren't. You might think we would say enough is enough, but here we are again, falling for the same old line about job creation and economic development. Why would we double down on a policy that has already failed to produce results? City and state officials, dazzled by the prospect of 50,000 jobs and a very public display of economic development, apparently can't resist the temptation to squander taxpayer money to close the deal. But there is a better way. Instead of using taxpayer money to choose winners and losers and forcing ordinary Pennsylvanians to pick up the tab, we should follow the lead of places like Nashville, Austin, and Dallas that can showcase a business-friendly environment with pro-growth policies like a state right-to-work law and no income tax. In short, what's good enough for any large corporation looking for a deal should be good enough for every business in Pennsylvania. That's the way to attract businesses looking to relocate or build a new facility. And the states that play for the long term will end up much better off than those that rely on a steady diet of taxpayer-funded incentives to produce growth. Pennsylvania has so much promise, and we're on the verge of unlocking the state's full potential. But an antiquated vision that sees corporate welfare as the way to create economic growth and expand opportunity is a barrier to unleashing our promise. I'm Beth Ann Mumford, State Director of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania. Find us on the web at www.afppennsylvania.com.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WBHV-AM in Somerset, WXMT-FM in Smithport, along with WOWY-FM in State College, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.